For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
We got a five-yard rule with the cornerbacks, right? The Mel Blount rule, right? Now with the push thing with Hurts, you got to be a yard back now. So don't tell me you can't have those safeties closer to the line of scrimmage than they are. I was at games where I'm thinking, hey, too high, they're out in outer space. Too, I couldn't even find us. And they're playing with nine guys, right? Where are the other two? Oh, the other two, they're so daggone far back, and even though they're part of damn play. I'm telling you, we got to change this thing.
Mel Kiper. Did he get more Southern as that clip went on? He starts like building in an accent, and then goes with a straight up dang.
How old is he?
64.
He's got a lot of energy for, guess how old he is? 64.
Is he?
He's 64 years old.
I am hot today.
Yeah, wow.
First, I remember Ricky Williams, 42 carries in week three against the Bills.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a lot of energy for 64.
Sure. Good morning, Jeremy and Joe. Kevin Cole of the Unexpected Points podcast and Substack. Great subscription. Great former PFF guy coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll get a couple calls to catch up on some ideas. So you heard the Kiper clip. There's a big conversation about football and explosive plays. And we'll dig into the meat of that with Kevin Cole coming up in a minute. He's got an interesting perspective. I was retweeting and pushing a lot of what he said because I think it's a big part of it, the conversation about explosive plays in the NFL. But the fun part of what we're doing today is taking your suggestions about, like, what is the crazy rule you do want to see? That's a crazy idea, limiting safeties and where they can line up. To me, it's not impossible to enforce. I mean, illegal defense is something that we have seen before. The NBA had an illegal defense, and there's a defensive three-second call. And Major League Baseball had a defensive evolution, and then they said, that's not legal anymore because it's ruining the sport. So I think this conversation kind of gets to, no, the sport is not being ruined. I do not think we have some sort of long-term insurmountable problem. But if it ever looked like that, then I would fully support the NFL changing the rules. You don't just have to accept the evolutions of your sport. Once they start to get bad for your sport, you course correct.
Yeah.
You know, if defense figured it out and it got to where no one scores touchdowns, they'd be like, okay, well, we got to change that. You know, so what's your crazy rule? It can be football, can be any sport out there. 803-0550 to join us, and 1-888-550-2550. Rodgers looked good, a lot better than he did in the first two games, and the Patriots, the honeymoon appears to be over.
Also, the Jets kind of showed you a little bit of what the answer is to when defenses are backing up on you. I don't know if the Patriots are doing it as much as everybody, because they still play a lot of man coverage, I guess, but how were the Jets getting a lot of yards yesterday? Rodgers was throwing the ball 5 to 10 yards.
Yards after catch.
And then, right, it didn't matter who it was. Braylon Allen, Breece Hall, Alan Lazard looked like Gronk out there in a couple of plays. Like, the Patriots just couldn't stop the Jet guys from getting yak.
And that's what the Bills' plan has been, right? They've been trying to move to more of a yak-based system and team. Shakir gives them that. The idea is that Curtis Samuel can give them that. Keon Coleman is supposed to be an explosive playmaker, which, by the way, like, maybe we'll get more of this on Monday when it's actual game day. I'm ready for the Keon Coleman breakout. He has one nice catch and had a good day against Arizona. I'm ready for a nice little, we had the Marvin Harrison explosion. Yeah. We had the Malik Nabers explosion. Odunze has not done that at all, but the Bears' passing offense is stuck in the mud right now. Brian Thomas Jr.'s had a moment or two.
Yep. Coleman's yet to have that route, that play, the runway play that we had in mind before the season.
Yeah.
Like, that one hasn't really happened yet.
Nope.
It's only been 4 catches.
Yeah, he's got five catches. 6 targets?
Yeah. And there hasn't been a lot of, you throw it to him in space, and, hey, that's why he was a punt returner at Florida State.
There's also not been a basketball play throw. I guess the one on the sideline is kind of a little bit
kinda,
that.
Yeah.
But, like, high pointing a ball That's some of what he does, the body control stuff. So be cool if we see some of that come Monday night. Craig in Williamsville. Hey, Craig, good morning.
Oh, hey, guys. How you doing?
Morning. Good.
Very good.
You guys were talking about the closet and Ken Coffin. So I'm a friend of Ken's. He's just a great guy, and I just wanted to give a shout-out. I'm glad he was honored. I was one of the people that he worked with in one of your – in that music closet. He did one of my jingles for my law firm, Small Law. He did Hurt Slip Fall, Call Craig Small. So Ken's awesome. He did – he worked for you guys for a long time. He's probably, I don't know if you worked there then, but
– Oh, yeah, I did.
He's great.
Yep.
And that closet did exist.
That's right. That's right. The jingle room. Thanks, Craig. Had a couple people write in that they had been in that room and done musical stuff as well.
Room or closet?
Room.
Definitely room? Okay. All right.
Yeah. Filled with enough instruments that made it look a little, you know.
Because there were so many things in it.
Yeah. 803-0550. The Rodgers, by the way, also from last night. The Rodgers rejected hug stare down.
Yeah. So, I don't love playing the, ooh, what did he say on the sidelines game, right? Because that's Diggs-esque, isn't it? Let's all guess at what the guy on the sidelines said. But, when not only when he pushes Rodgers, but it was, to me, pretty evil glare that he gave his head coach after he tried to hug him.
As the person that always wants to downplay sideline stuff because... I think it's a net negative that we see these interactions because we all just insert our own things. Have you not seen somebody in sports make a play and you go to hug them and they push and say, back up off me, I'm the man, I'm him. You know, you make a play sometimes as a professional athlete, you look mad.
Yeah.
We had Diggs, not mad at somebody else, but he's on the sideline after a touchdown with a mean mug face, hitting his chest like I'm... Sometimes when you make a good play, you look mad. Because you're so pumped up. Is that possible what he did there? Could that be it?
Yeah.
He just doesn't want a hug.
But
you can't touch me, get off me.
So I'm watching though, I'm watching a video that the Jets put out.
What is the play before?
The play before he comes over to the sideline?
Yeah.
Isn't that the touchdown?
Right.
Yeah.
So
but I will say he walks away. There's another video where he walks away from Robert Saleh. He slaps up the next guy. And then the third guy goes in for the hug, Breece Hall. He gives Breece Hall a hug.
Wait, so he pushes away Saleh.
But he hugs Breece Hall.
But he pushes away Saleh, but then he does shake his hand and slap and dap him up.
Does he? Okay. He walks over, claps. He comes out for the handshake. Rodgers wants the handshake with Saleh. He doesn't want the hug. That's what happens.
You know what's funny? Is the zoom out show...
No, don't hug me. Don't hug
me. It's a little zoomed out. It shows more of it.
Yeah.
Because on the zoomed in video, you can't see that he has slapped up Saleh before the push.
Right. But he very quickly is like, no, don't hug me. Don't hug me.
Maybe he just doesn't want to hug.
But then he hugs Breece Hall.
He doesn't like coach hugs.
I don't know if he likes Robert Saleh. All right, I'll go. I'll do it. I'll recklessly speculate. I don't think Aaron Rodgers likes Robert Saleh.
Well,
there.
The good news
Bam.
Is...
Coach he controversy.
He doesn't have to. Just got to win games.
Well, Saleh might need him to.
How much of that is a point? Is games. A point here? If they lost that game and that highlight exists, it's Armageddon. Instead,
they
won the game.
They won the game. They won it comfortably. Yeah. I don't know. And then he did you hear his answer after the game about it? That it was that like, Robert's a hug guy. You know, I'm not. The game's not over. Type of, I don't know. Just. Trying to explain it away after. He just always comes off as not being sincere. It's hard to, accuse him of lying every single time, but he just never comes off as sincere. I don't know how to trust it. So, it doesn't need to be a thing. It's just, it was weird, right?
Yep.
It was just weird.
Sure.
Hug your coach. You scored a touchdown, he wants a hug. Don't push him away. You're showing him up a little bit. You know, all the dig sideline videos, he's never shoving a guy like that.
No, that's why I called it a light Kelsey-ing, because Kelsey pushed Andy Reid
in the
Super Bowl.
Yeah, he did.
If you win the game, it just goes away. That's it. You have a sideline dust-up and you win, everything's fine. 803-0550. Football Friday It is brought to you by Salino Law, Car Crash, Call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your day the Crosby's way. Jeremy and Joe chatting it up about crazy rule change ideas. You got Mel Kiper saying about the two high safeties. Rogers said something about Kiper after the game.
Did he?
He said, 3 games in, the game plan for every team has been to take away Garrett Wilson. It's Mel Kiper's worst nightmare.
Wow.
Yeah. Because defenses are, you know, putting safeties over the top and making sure Garrett Wilson doesn't beat them. What did Garrett Wilson do yesterday? Caught a touchdown. Didn't matter.
On a perfect throw, by the way. They're also using Braylon Allen out of the backfield a lot.
Yeah.
And that guy looks, he might be, it's 3 games, but how many other guys in the league look like that where it's just defenders like wince when they hit him?
Yeah.
Because that's what it looks like when they hit Braylon Allen.
He looks like
he's huge.
You know, we're talking about huge run versus pass and cycles. Braylon Allen looks like an old school running back of like size and speed. And
so it looks like he should have a neck roll?
Yeah.
A little bit.
He's pretty big. Joining us on the Western Hotline is Kevin Cole, friend of the show. I've had him on several times of the Unexpected Points podcast, newsletter, Substack, all that. Kevin, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good. We're good. I was yesterday's conversation, we've kind of turned it in today about, you know, crazy rule change ideas that you like or you would support after the football world got set on his ear by a suggestion of banning two high safeties. But the larger conversation, Kevin, I think is interesting and doesn't have to go too far into film study. I think what Mel Kiper is getting to and what football, whatever, if you want to say people that follow the data of it or follow the stats, the downtick in passing, the downtick in explosive plays, the downtick in touchdowns is because of what defenses have decided to do and how they've changed the way they're willing to play these offenses.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the key. Of course, you have to combine talking to some subject matter experts on this, and I've tried to do that. But yeah, I think if you look at it, there's a couple different things you want to be able to establish with the data. First is, like, is this a real thing? Is it something that looks like it might reverse? And it pretty much tells us convincingly that the decline that we've seen since 2020 is something that's unprecedented since the passing era really started in the early 80s. So it is something real. And then the second thing is, yeah, defenses are really just saying, you know what, we're going to make you beat us running the ball if you choose to do so. And NFL teams, when you check the data, just haven't gotten any better at running the ball, despite what the reflexive answers may be by people on social media or analysts on TV saying, you know, you just run the ball and that's your solution. It doesn't seem to be the real solution, at least according to the numbers I'm looking at.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, running is getting better, but I've seen you've kind of pulled this out that the reason running is up is actually the quarterbacks. And, you know, we, of course, live here in Buffalo. We see Josh Allen. Kyler Murray has averaged 11 yards per carry this season, I think. Like, you're seeing the running quarterbacks are where the running ads are coming from.
Yeah. I mean, to a slight degree when it comes to, like, designed runs for quarterbacks. So if we're talking about, you know, a read option type of situation, but even more to a degree to scrambling. I mean, lots of quarterbacks are scrambling. You get big gains that way. And scrambles are somewhat of a poor way of even measuring the value of that type of play because, you know, if you scramble but you get tackled two lines behind the line of scrimmage, guess what? That's a sack. That's not a scramble. So it doesn't even count as a negative. They can only be positive, these scrambling types of plays. And that's what's boosting even traditional statistics like yards per carry. I think it's 4.5 this year. It would only be 4.2 without scrambles. It would be much in line with the averages. So it's really the quarterbacks just love to scramble now. We have lots of mobile quarterbacks, and those scrambling numbers are bumping up rushing efficiency numbers where they're not really solutions. They're more things the quarterbacks have to do because they can't find guys to pass it to down the field.
Kevin Cole on the Western Hotline. I liked one of the ways you phrased it. You know, as we're hearing all this about limiting explosive plays and the best way to beat that is to run and force a team to change. And you used the phrase something to the effect of defensive coordinators will not play along anymore. That it used to be you could just run it and then switch. And now if you try to run it, they're just going to stay in their base. The Bills have done this for 8 years, nickel defense for 8 years, and daring you to pass over, daring you to run, saying you're not going to pass over the top of us. And Sean McDermott has ridden that to a big a big amount of success in stopping explosive plays, best in the league since he showed up. So defensive coordinators not playing along as a concept, and why this is not exactly a new cycle in the NFL, but I guess the continued evolution.
Yeah, I think that's really the important thing. Again, you see lots of solutions where people say, you know what we'll do, if they're running these too high defenses and they're taking away our explosive passing plays, we'll run the ball, then they'll change, and then they'll let us do the really valuable stuff. Well, I mean, it's kind of an illogical sequence of events, and I do think there is a psychological factor at play where teams have been emphasizing for forever defensively that they want to be physical, that they want to stop the run. We just heard, you know, and everyone kind of mocked the fact that Roquan Smith, before playing the Chiefs in week one, said he wanted to make the Chiefs one-dimensional. That's how you stop Patrick Mahomes. I mean, those sorts of concepts have been around for a very long time, and I think maybe defensive coordinators and even defenders themselves have become a little bit more comfortable saying, you know what, if they rip off a 5-yard run and then a 7-yard run and then a 10-yard run, they could have done that in just one pass if we allowed them to pass the ball down the field. We got to be a little bit more comfortable with that. And you're also setting up the opposing offense to have to convert a lot of third downs. And if these quarterbacks can't do it, if they can't convert these third and mediums, then you're going to win by just forcing the other team to punt. So, yeah, the defenses have finally caught on to the fact of it's about stopping point. It's not about necessarily stopping the feeling that we're getting out physical on the football field.
Is that almost to say, Kevin, kind of that even though like defenses are kind of inviting you to take these smaller plays, like we're not going to give you it down the field, that maybe offenses should say, all right, you're not giving it to us and we might not be as good at it as we were a few years ago, but we're just going to keep trying it anyway?
Yeah, I think there probably has to be a new solution. I don't know exactly what that will be, but one of the problems that I see with a lot of the analysis, again, it's saying, you know, one solution people are saying, well, you know, offensive line isn't like it used to be, or, you know, we don't run the ball like we used to, or quarterbacks don't play like they used to. Well, you know, if we do everything like we did 15 years ago, then we have the NFL of 15 years ago. I think what's happened, innovations, you know, there was the West Coast offense, which took advantage of a lot of space underneath that wasn't being used in these offenses. Then there was a spread offense, which eventually made its way to the NFL, which again was taking advantage of space in different areas. And I think defenders are now saying, you know what, this space down the field and this intermediate space is extremely valuable. We got to take that away defensively. So now the offenses are going to have to come up with a way, I think, of creating more space, maybe not just throw it for the sake of throwing it, because it is true that it's rational for teams to be running more than they did in the past, because the margins between rushing efficiency and passing efficiency have narrowed mightily. I mean, rushing efficiency hasn't gotten any better, but then passing efficiency has gone way down. So it makes sense that you'd be running it more. But I think ultimately the solution is going to be, how do you unlock more passing efficiency? And it might not just be, you know, beating your head against the wall. It might be having to scheme and figure out how to open up space and manipulate the defense with what they're doing now.
Kevin, how much do you subscribe to the idea that it's about quarterback play? 5 years ago, we might be in the golden age of quarterbacks. There's a really good run of young guys with older guys that had hung on for a long time, like Brady, and I mean, Rodgers is still at his peak back then, versus now, Joe and I counted, there's about a quarter of the league is first and second year guys still trying to find their way.
I think it matters. I think it definitely matters. Now, the timing doesn't necessarily align perfectly, because a lot of the names that you talk about as passing on in the last 10 years, at least from their peaks, when we're talking about, you know, Peyton Manning, Roethlisberger, Rivers, Drew Brees, all those types of guys, they weren't really in their peaks in 2020 when the NFL passing game was at its peak. So it doesn't align perfectly. But I think what may have happened is, because the spread offenses and that have been developed in college, the air raid, all that sort of stuff, a lot of those concepts flowed into the NFL, which also simplified quarterback play in a way. I think the NFL was a step ahead offensively. That masked the fact that quarterback play, we just went through the greatest era of quarterback play, that was a little bit lower than we've seen before. And now that defenses are making it more complicated, or kind of saying, well, we're going to go back to hard mode when it comes to being able to convert third downs and find players down the field, now we're starting to see, you know, the tide has gone back out, and we're starting to see that some of these guys maybe aren't as great as.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
As we thought they were when they can't play on an easy sort of mode when quarterback and scheming.
Kevin, how do you feel the Bills are equipped to kind of take all of this into account, the way the this whole landscape of the league conversation, the way that they're going about their offense through a couple games, the way they've always played on defense? How do you feel like they're equipped to go about this season playing that way?
Well, you know, it's interesting because obviously we've had, you know, offensive coordinator changes over the years. So I remember, even we're talking about when Brian Daboll was there, they would just pass it like crazy when I thought that was like a really efficient thing to do sometimes, even when Josh Allen hadn't necessarily had his full breakout, which happened in 2020. And now what I see with passes that are underneath guys who can create yak, I think that's very important to combat some of these things. And then, you know, using Josh Allen as a runner is very, very important. The concern there, of course, is going to be his health. And you're right, on the defensive side of things, I think McDermott has always been ahead of things, and you know, sometimes it can bite you a bit, like the weather apocalypse game where the Patriots just kept on running over and over again, and you can feel bad about it. But I think you have to look at the larger picture and being able to ride through those things. Obviously, McDermott has built up enough of a reputation there where I don't think he's as worried on a game by game basis. So I think they're doing the right things. I'd be a little bit concerned though about Allen's health when it comes to running the ball, but sometimes it's a risk that you have to take in order to drive, you know, a really efficient offense.
Kevin Cole, unexpectedpoints.com, podcast, newsletter, Substack, all of it. Kevin, thanks again, and great work. Talk again soon.
All right, thanks, guys.
Unexpectedpoints.com. Got a bunch of good stuff on there. He's got his power rankings. You know where he puts the Bills?
He puts the Bills fourth.
Two.
Mm-hmm. Behind Kansas City?
Behind San Francisco.
What?
Two.
What?
And
there's someone out there that's got the Bills above the Chiefs?
Not just two. At his website, unexpectedpoints.com, the header he gave it is Bills separating from the second tier.
All right.
Boosts the Bills, not just past the Chiefs, but a tier above. It's been a good start for them. Chris Brown, when we get back, I was listening to One Bills Live yesterday or the day before, and Brownie was talking about kind of what Ed Oliver was. The Jags. These games get weird.
Yeah.
Monday Night Football, 7:30. That's weird. And Bills-Jags can get weird. So we'll talk with Chris Brown, who will have the call of the game on Monday. It is Football Friday, sponsored by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way, where you're back in a snap. Brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills.
Chris Brown's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hard-working men and women.
Time for Chris Brown, chatting Bills on a Football Friday. Football Friday here on WGR. Brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. Morning, Chris. I heard you guys talk in Jacksonville, and Oliver said how these games are always weird. You know, 2-0 versus 0-2. It kind of doesn't feel like that. I think Bills fans might have a healthy respect for Jacksonville, knowing that they've been able to bite the Bills a couple times.
Yeah, I even called them a bugaboo opponent a little bit because for some reason a lot of the success that the Bills enjoy, whether it's the offensive side of the ball or defensive side of the ball, it always seems to be more of a struggle against Jacksonville. And I was trying to find reasons why over the last two meetings, and it was noteworthy to mention that in the Week 5 meeting last year, the Bills went into that game without Greg Rousseau and Christian Benford. Both were out with injuries. And then they lose Daquan Jones and Matt Milano in the first three series of the game, and they had just lost Tre'Davious White the week before. I mean, that's a cavalcade of injuries, and they lose by five. So I don't know. I'm trying to pin it down, but I think, you know, Jacksonville just might be that opponent that's harder for them to play against for some unknown, unspecified reason.
One thing the Jags do, this version of the Jags, they get their explosive plays. Like this week in the NFL, Chris, explosive plays have been a big topic. And here's Jacksonville, number one in the league in explosive play rate, coming in against the Bills defense that often limits them. So it's even though Jacksonville has had their struggles on offense, I think they do present a good test for this Bills defense in showing everyone that they can, again, kind of hold down an offense with some potential.
Yes, and I think Brian Thomas is probably the guy to worry about the most. He has been the most explosive player for the Jaguars, their number one draft pick in this much ballyhooed wide receiver class. So I think, you know, playing top down, as the Bills are known to do, will be in order here. The key to being able to do that, however, is to be able to stop the run with 6- and 7-man fronts. As long as you can do that, they should be fine in negating big plays, as they do with so many opponents.
What's your opinion of Trevor Lawrence on the overall? Feels like asked this of a Jaguars guest earlier, Chris, that feels like I see three throws every week that look amazing, and then you look up at the stat line or just the result of the game, and it's how did that happen? Like, there's a lot of talent there, but we're still kind of waiting maybe for it all to come together, and at this point maybe you're just wondering if it never will.
Yeah, fourth year, right? So when is it going to click is kind of the question that everybody's asking, because you can see the talent. I mean, his touchdown throw in the back of the end zone in week one over Jordan Poyer and another defensive back for Miami was insane. I mean, he threw it before the intended receiver had even broke from the post to the corner. So the anticipation and the arm talent, and let's not forget this, the guy can run. I don't think the pass rush plan is going to be all that different from what it was against Kyler Murray in week one with the legs that he has. He can really run, and I think he's still underrated as a runner. But all that being said, I think it's pretty apparent he has not reached that elite level of quarterbacking, which when you're the first pick in the draft, it's kind of expected. So he has not reached that level. I think when Doug Peterson became the head coach, there was hope that, oh, here's a head coach that will help him get to that level, and we just have not seen that manifest itself in any way for him. And I think, you know, just talking to a lot of people around the league this week, I think Jacksonville's trying to find that elite level of play as well, and it's hard to really pin down what their identity is offensively. And you look at all the talent they have on that side of the ball, you're like, what's the problem? But let's just hope they don't find it this week.
Chris Brown on Bills and Jags. Speaking of offensive identity, we're two games in for the Bills, and we've seen one game of, you know, Josh Allen does it all, and we've seen a little more commitment to the run. But it feels like there's still a lot of this Bills offense that's kind of yet to be unearthed, whether that's Kincaid being a big part of it, Curtis Samuel nursing that foot injury, Keon Coleman. Like last week against Miami, they didn't really need much of their offense. So potentially a game here where we get a little bit more of their identity here.
Yeah, Steve and I were talking about it on One Bills Live. We almost feel like the Bills have offense hasn't even put it into gear yet, and they've hung 30 on their first two opponents. I guess that's a good thing going forward if they haven't really even come close to using all of their faculties to score points. So I would be encouraged by that. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're all curious as to what the game plan would be this week. I think the Jags defense has been susceptible to big plays themselves. And while they do hold teams down on the scoreboard, I think they're giving up an average of 19 points a game through the first 2 weeks. And that's, you know, nothing to sneeze at, considering Miami was their week one opponent. I think that they are vulnerable in certain areas. And without Tyson Campbell, their top corner, who's on IR now after suffering a hamstring injury in week one, they're a little thin at corner. So if I'm the Bills, I might even throw a little four wide out there just to test the depth of their cornerback contingent, because they're starting a rookie at the nickel spot, and they've got another rookie as their fifth corner. So you want to spread them thin, I would spread them out, put receivers on the field on Monday night.
With that being said, do you think, I mean, Shakir, especially if they're nickel corners like that, I mean, Shakir would be the guy you think of right away. The other receivers, I mean, they're not going to be in, I'm sure, a lot of games like Miami where they can just kind of hit the cruise control button in the second half. A guy that you think is going to be more involved than he has been in the first 2 weeks, it probably could be any of the other three receivers, I would think.
Right, and, you know, I think that's the beauty of this offense, and I think I don't know that we've got a tremendous amount of evidence of this, but we talked about this going into the season. You know, without a Diggs or an alpha receiver, Josh is kind of in the same boat that Jordan Love was in last year. And Jordan Love talked about this a lot during training camp for the Packers. He said, I like it because I can just play the play. And I think Josh has that freedom now. There isn't this, he's not beholden to get his alpha receiver more involved and make more plays and, you know, force feed him the football. Josh can just call the play and play the play and not feel like he's got to play favorites out there. I think that makes this offense more unpredictable.
7:30 Monday night for Monday Night Football. Chris, thanks. We'll chat Tuesday.
All right. Enjoy the weekend.
All right.
Thanks,
Chris. Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. Speaking of Shakir, the fantasy site that tells me what to do, Joe, wants me to start Shakir over Christian Kirk. I have both these guys on one
team.
Wait,
he wants you to start Shakir or
I'm
Kirk?
I'm sorry. It wants me to start Kirk over Shakir, and I'm not going to do that. I'm at Shakir. If you're a deep enough league, I meant Shakir is in the lineup every week. Is he not getting at least 7 targets in this game?
I think you would need to have a loaded, loaded team to not have him at least in like a flex spot.
Yeah.
Because he right now is the number one target in a Josh Allen offense.
And wouldn't you even conservatively say, oh, okay, he'll get 8 targets. That's good for 8 catches.
Yeah.
Wait, the streak. We got to watch the streak. What's this?
21 targets in a row, and I think he's 7 or 8 off the NFL record. I looked this up the other day. I think I have it. It's a little bit of a hard stat to find, but I think I have it, that he has the longest streak ever of consecutive targets caught by a wide receiver. Like the only there's a bunch of names above him, but they're all running backs, and maybe there's like a tight end. So
keep the streak alive.
Yeah, like I don't want to jinx him, but he's and there is a playoff game in there. Like the Chief playoff game, I think he caught 7 of 9 targets. So that's another little asterisk here. But the point is, he is catching everything that comes his way.
Yeah,
and that's on top of the yak ability after. So
there's two things there. There's the hands, the efficiency. There's also built into that the reason the record is held by a running back. He's not getting the Gabe Davis throws.
Like, no, right. Like, they're dump offs. Running back ones.
Right. And Shakir is middle of the field. What's the deepest throw of those 21 consecutive targets? Might it be 15, 20 yards?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, most of them are going to be 10 yards ish. But whatever, like it's built in. 803-0550, our thanks to Chris Brown. Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy coming up at the top of the hour. There's another streak to watch. Aiden Hutchinson this weekend is going for a record. We'll get to that in the Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy. Also, I have a new favorite, one of my favorite players in the NFL, Cam Taylor-Britt. Remember last week?
Cam Taylor-Britt, he made the one-handed interception?
But before that, how he trash-talked Xavier Worthy.
He just
runs straight. That's all he does.
Yeah.
Cam Taylor-Britt has given us another one. This time, he's breaking down the Washington offense. Tell you what he said next.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Friday. Football Friday. Quick thing I want to get in here. Joe, who needs to get results? Who needs to just get results? Brought to you by Dan Chacha, injury attorneys. No worries, just results. For Bills, Jags, who needs to get results? I got it. Keon Coleman. I'm ready for the Keon Coleman show. Or actually, you know what? Ahead of him, Dalton Kincaid.
Okay. I got a defensive answer. Bale and Spector.
Right.
I need them to not just get eaten alive in the middle of the field because they've sustained injuries, but how many? There's a line in the sand. There has to be. There's a line in the sand. They can't just lose everybody and still be a top 10 defense. Yeah. Eventually, the dam's got to break, and just hopefully that's not middle linebacker. The dam's not middle linebacker.
John in South Buffalo. Good morning, John.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Very good.
So with hockey season upon us, what I think is really fascinating about this year's Sabres group is the potential variants of outcome that could come out of this season. So like a lot of people, I'm reading the preview magazines, I'm watching the standings predictions on YouTube, and I've seen people predict this team to be anywhere from this team that regresses offensively and goaltending-wise, without Jeff Skinner, we didn't really replace his offensive production in terms of goals. Lukanen's going to come back to the mean. Ruff really isn't the guy. And we're going to be the 75 to 80-point team, and we're going to blow everything up. Conversely, I've seen predictions that say this is going to be the year that the young core is going to get it all together. Tage and Tuck and Dahlin and Cousins are going to have these bounce-back years. Lindy is the right answer. And I've seen people predict the Sabres team to be this 105-point team that pushes to be second in the division. So I guess my question for you guys is, what do you guys think this team's floor is? What is the worst-case scenario, and what does that look like? Conversely, what is the best-case scenario? What do you think the team's ceiling is, and also what does that look like? And I guess just where do you think this team is going to end up this year? Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, thanks.
I think their best case scenario is third in the division.
The way I'd want to answer the question is I think their floor is lower than – I think the floor is lower than the ceiling is high. Would be the way I want to put it.
The division is always context. The Stanley Cup champions are in the division.
Yep.
As are the Leafs and the Lightning and the Bruins, who are somehow always good.
Yep. You say third. I don't think they can finish in the top three.
You think it has to be wild card?
I think it has to be wild card. On the flip side, I think they could finish last.
Let me tell you something. This is a tweet I didn't send because I didn't want to be... Even I have restraints, guardrails on my snark meter, but here it is. I'll say it because I can, you know... I like Lindy. I like this idea. I think he can be a good hockey coach again with this organization. When the Sabres tweeted out pictures of him making them do push-ups...
Mm-hmm.
I very quickly found when the Bills had Rex Ryan have players do push-ups. Like, that is optics. Is that really going to make a difference? Is that actual accountability, or does that look like accountability to us? Here's a picture of people doing push-ups. Great. Congratulations. You're not going to win games because of push-ups. You are going to win maybe more if you are accountable, dedicated, work hard. I get all that. But when I saw the push-up stuff, it's like, I've seen the push-up show before. So I didn't tweet it because I didn't want to sound like I thought Lindy was a fraud, but just that I feel like I'm being worked here to try and believe in push-ups again. Gonna need goals.
Believe in push-ups.
Right. I don't need push-ups. I need Tage to score 95 points. I need Paterka to score 82 points. I wonder if I can give her Paterka to lead the team in scoring.
Ooh.
I just love Paterka.
Lead them in scoring or goals? I mean, I guess it'd be the same thing. Or it could be the same thing.
Yeah, you're right. It could be one or the other. Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy. We're going to remember some Jags. We're going to take some calls and take you through this week as well. Coming up on WGR.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.